Welcome to the one and only Brunch Network, where thousands tune in weekly to listen to our hosts roll out of bed and talk all things sports and gambling. Now for the guys that help cure all your hangovers.
Back to the Sports Brunch here on this Wednesday, April 4th, 8 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast. As always, my name is Joe Caputo, joined by my co-host, Chris Malecki. Chris, how are you enjoying the first week of the MLB season?
Whoa, hold the phone here. Is Joe trying to talk basketball with me?
No, I'm not. Ivan Nova just gave up a go-ahead double to Logan Morrison, and I considered for a moment maybe switching my allegiance to the NBA.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, I don't know what to say. This is very unlike you. I mean, maybe it was just a Freudian slip, but let's talk the real sport that we're getting into today. Although there could be some NBA on the horizon, little teaser there. But we're well underway with baseball. We're about a week in. And it's been good so far. I mean, I can't complain too much about the Sox, although we'll get to that. But they are 5-1. Your Yanks are doing pretty well as well. And, you know, I think we should try to get into as much as we can involving the rest of the teams in the AL East and the NL East. The Mets also 4-1 today after their win. And the one team that we want to focus on, the Phillies, they are the ones that are struggling right now. Where should we start?
Yeah, well, before we even get there, we do have to wrap up college basketball season.
Of course.
Let's get that over with now for the first part of the show. As always, I shouldn't say as always. This is only our second live show. But just as last week, guest line is pretty much open the entire show, 818-688-6658, 818-688-6658. 6658 if you want to speak with us at any point. But we'll start with the college basketball national championship and Final Four. It was Villanova and then everyone else, it turned out, not only in the Final Four, but for the entire tournament. Just a dominating performance from beginning to end, winning all six games by double figures, including the national championship, which, I mean, they started out a little shaky, but once they took the lead, they never looked back. I mean, it was just an absolutely dominating showing for them the entire tournament. Is this the most dominant team that you've seen? I mean, what's the last team that really holds up to Villanova? If you're talking about dominant teams that ran through the tournament, is it North Carolina in 2009? Do we have to go back that far?
That might be it, or, you know, maybe even UConn back in, I think maybe it was 04. It's been a while.
Yeah,
there's 04, other teams,
yeah.
Too. There's other teams, too, that, you know, have had their share of dominance, Duke and UNLV in the 90s. But really in our era, you know, of sports watching and really being into the sport, Villanova has put together something that you just don't really see in college basketball. And I honestly think a great comparison is to the Golden State Warriors. I mean, they just seem to be leagues better than everyone they face, and if they were on their game, which during the playoffs you are going to be as high on your game as you will be all season, you're not going to be able to beat them. And that's what happens with the Warriors, and that's what happened with Villanova. So it really, you know, give Jay Wright a ton of credit for not only turning this program and his image around, but also kind of implementing a certain style in college. And I've said it for a little while now, you know, the NBA has kind of, you know, evolved into more of a pace and space, three-point shooting, ball movement league, and college has yet to catch up to it. I understand that there are some talent discrepancies between the two that has led to that, but at the same time, especially when teams are playing zone defense, which somehow fucking Tom Izzo can't figure out his zone defense in 2018, you know, it's not the worst idea to, you know, follow that zigging while everyone is zagging. And I think, you know, Villanova had the talent to do it. They had shooters all around.
That's the key. I mean, you need the personnel to
right,
do it.
You have the personnel,
one.
But that's also recruiting. You know, I mean, Amari Spellman and Eric Paschal, guys who big men who could shoot is kind of the recipe to open things up for everyone else. And then having that steadying presence at point guard in Jalen Brunson, even Mikal Bridges, you know, he was a guy who maybe is not as viewed as a big man, but he can certainly function as one, especially in the college game. And he's just, you know, the kind of do-it-all player that really brings everything together and makes everything easier for everyone else. So Villanova, you know, yeah, really putting together a dominant run. They won all their games by 12 points each, at least. Covered every spread, and it was pretty remarkable to see. You know, just it, at a certain point, you know, whether it was the Final Four or the national championship, you realize that once these guys got clicking and out to like a 10-point lead, you're not keeping up with them.
Right, and they were. I mean, that was the thing, is that even when you try to make a run on them, and Kansas tried to do it, and Michigan tried to do it, they just hit threes, and they never really let an opposing team make a significant run back to get back into a game. Really, I mean, the closest game they play, and Chris, I mean, we've done enough touting ourselves here, enough giving ourselves credit on calling out before the tournament that the East region was the best region in the tournament.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Really, really quick.
Games.
Sorry, go ahead.
What were the two toughest games that Nova played this tournament? It wasn't in the Final Four.
No, it was probably Texas Tech and West Virginia.
Right. So there, I mean, there's the final nail in the coffin if we have not beaten it to death.
And I think in first of all, you know, those games were out of reach after a while. But West Virginia played a very good first half against Nova, and that was really the only time they looked vulnerable.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, think about winning two Final Four games by 16 and 17 points. It's incredible.
Yes. Yeah, and West, so, I mean, I think it's safe to say that, I mean, and a lot of people were clamoring about West Virginia, and more so the people that actually knew college basketball were talking about how underseeded West Virginia was in this tournament. But I think that I like that we're bringing them up right now, because they definitely deserve some sort of honorable mention, because West Virginia could very well have been a Final Four team if they were in any other region, and they got shafted.
They could have been a national champion.
Right, they could have been. I mean, you can't sit there and tell me right now that Michigan is clearly better than West Virginia. I mean, if West Virginia is in Michigan's position, yeah. So I think a nice little honorable mention here to West Virginia. Moments after the national championship, KenPom tweeted, "Offense wins championships." I wanted to talk about this. We've talked about it in the past, how offense trumps defense in the tournament. Villanova, obviously the number one offensive team in the country at the end of this season. Last year, number nine offensive team won the national championship in North Carolina. 2 years ago, it was Villanova at three. 3 years ago, it was Duke at three. And 4 years ago, it was – who the hell won it 4 years ago? I'm drawing a blank. Chris, help me out here.
Louisville? Did you say Louisville?
Louisville was 5 years ago. They were number seven. I'm missing. Oh, that was the year that UConn won. They were 39.
Oh, right.
So there's
UConn.
Your exception.
Yeah.
Five out of the last six national champions have been in the top 10 in offense. Is this just a run that people that we will get over? And
all right. I think we got disconnected for a moment, but. Chris will be calling back in shortly, but what I was referring to is that it seems like offense has taken over in these tournaments, and we've talked about it in the past, Chris and I, how on a neutral floor, when all else is equal, and these teams are at maximum effort, it seems like the better offensive teams, it's easier for them to go and play some good defense in the tournament than it is for a good defensive team with a struggling offense to go in and just start playing good offense in the tournament. We've been saying it all year long, and we've said it in the past as well. It seems like defense is more effort-based, more driven, more so by effort. And once you get these teams that are at maximum effort in the tournament, it just seems like the offense is what prevails. The teams that are, playing efficient and good offense all season long, those are the teams that are able to do the best in the NCAA tournament. So Villanova wins. Villanova is your national champion this year. It is always important, I think, and Chris and I have done this, and Chris once again will be on in a minute. Chris and I have always gone back and talked about what we've learned from the tournament, and we like to make this episode, or at least this segment of this episode, applicable to future years. You know, you're getting ready to pick your bracket in 2019, and you want something to go off of. You want some tips and tricks that are used, that could be put into use to pick your bracket next year. So that is where I want to go now. What Chris and I have learned, and again, Chris shortly, what Chris and I have learned in this tournament that we could apply to next year. And I think the number one thing that I learned, and I think we've said this for a while now, is that don't get too cute. And that is something that, you know, you may have, when you see UMBC beat Virginia, when you see Loyola Chicago make the Final Four, it is always tempting to go back and say, damn, if I would have just picked that matchup, that upset, that could have been what did it for me. I mean, and it's just not the case. I mean, you have so many teams like Loyola Chicago that had the same odds as Loyola Chicago to make the Final Four, and the odds of you picking Loyola Chicago of all those teams that could have been Loyola Chicago is extremely low. So the first thing I would say to you is never, never get blinded by the upsets that happen in the tournament. Let them happen. No one has them picked. I mean, no one could pick these kinds of upsets, UMBC over Virginia, Buffalo over Arizona. It's not worth it. Now, it is important to pick against teams that you don't have confidence in. So that is something that I think is important to being able to identify. Okay, Arizona was not a good team this year, and they should be faded. And finally, we have Chris. You are back on the air here.
Hey, sorry about that. I'm not sure what Block Talk's trying to keep me from saying, but I'm back.
All right. So what I was just talking about in your absence was, I think, a very important topic that is a good tip for next year, which is talking about how you could be falling in love with upsets, picking upsets like, you know, wanting to pick the next Loyola Chicago or wanting to pick the next UMBC over Virginia. And I was just talking about how it's important to kind of keep away from picking upsets like that in your bracket. How do you feel about that? And give me a takeaway that you have from this tournament and a tip for future Chris in picking his 2019 bracket.
Well, I think it's a good point because usually these things tend to correct themselves, and also it's kind of hard to pick that team. I mean, there's a handful of teams we saw that could have potentially had a Loyola Chicago run, and yet Loyola's bracket broke the right way. They won a lot of close games, and they definitely had some luck involved. So it does take a little bit of luck there, and it's hard to do. In terms of the offense, I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, obviously you can't really come into college basketball expecting to win with a terrible defense, but Villanova obviously had the balance, and I think the offense trumped the defense. When push came to shove, I mean, Michigan 35th in offense, 3rd in defense. So it kind of goes to show you that we're in an age where I believe the offense has somewhat of an advantage in the sport of basketball. In terms of going forward for next year, I mean, I would say, what did I learn from this tournament? Well, first thing I learned from this tournament is that the first half unders in the
that's
the
good
first
point.
Round. Are the locks of the century. I mean, I think I bet 9 of them, and I went 8-1. So, you know, the teams tend to get the jitters out there, and all they need is a little bit of a cold stretch when they're still tight, and all of a sudden your under is well on pace for the first half. So that was one thing I learned betting-wise that kind of saved me when we were in Vegas. But also, you know, I think that you really have to look at the matchups, especially when it comes to the tournament, and see how these it's a bit more difficult just looking at, you know, teams compared against each other with an eye test, because you're kind of comparing apples to oranges, different conferences. So I think it's always important to look at the matchups, and KenPom has a great feature on his site that you can do that for. But also, you know, just keep in mind that balance is very important. And yes, like, there are teams that can get by with a bit of a weaker unit, but you know, the fact that Villanova was able to run through with such ease, they weren't just an offensive juggernaut. They were still a pretty good defensive team. And I think Michigan probably had one of the more easier runs to the final in recent memory, not to take anything away from them. But, you know, I think that if they were facing a different team, it could have been a different story. And we'll look back and wonder what went wrong with Michigan State and Duke, and sometimes you just can't get it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, this tournament is just impossible to predict.
The two of us tend to
finish in the middle of the pack in the brackets, and you know, it's just kind of how it is. Although I will say, the past 2 years, this is the second year in a row that a brunch co-host has picked the national championship correct.
Yeah, I mean, you picked Villanova this year. I picked North Carolina last year. You go back 2 years ago, that was your Duke one. Or no, that was your Nova one. Yeah, we didn't pick – neither of us picked them that year. But,
We
generally don't perform as poorly in the earlier rounds as we did this year. This was kind of a whack year. But I do want to say for Michigan, I mean, they definitely were not the second-best team in the country. You clearly saw that when they played Villanova. Michigan got a really easy draw, and I'm actually really mad at myself that I even bet Michigan in that final game. I was kind of just carried away by the whole underdog in the championship, and Michigan looked good, and I thought they'd maybe frustrate Nova on the defensive end. But I think that
made
Michigan
a ton of sense. It was Villanova was just on a run where like he just couldn't save that team.
Yeah, and Michigan just wasn't going to be able to keep up with them offensively. And that really was never able to be exposed, because you look at Michigan's road to the final. When did they play a good offensive team? They didn't. I mean, the best offensive team they played was probably Houston, and Houston's not a good offensive team. So they were helped out by their draw. And everyone that picked Michigan to get to the final, I'm not going to say it was a bad pick, but you definitely lucked out in the teams that you got to play. And then they were exposed in the final. So I think that's all we really have remaining for college basketball. Any final words?
No, I think it was a great season. It got capped off with the best team winning it, and it was a really fun tournament. I had a lot of fun this year. I think more so than the years past. So it continues to grow, continues to get better, and now we must wait a long time for more college basketball. But luckily, we have some things to kind of hold us over, and that is the great sport of baseball.
Ever since we started getting into baseball season, the end of college basketball has hurt a little bit less than, you know, when we first started this podcast, we weren't as into baseball, and we'd get real depressed at the end of March Madness, but things are not
depressed.
As bad in brunch world. All right, if you want to call in once again, guest line 818-688-6658. Let's talk a little baseball, Chris. And we have a few baseball topics we want to get to first. Let's talk about those AL and NL East teams that you mentioned on the top of the show. We'll talk Yanks and Red Sox first, both off to awesome years. Chris, I think the concern for the Yankees is what everyone thought was going to be their strength, and that's their bullpen. I think the concern for the Red Sox, what would you say it is? I think probably you're going to lean towards the hitting right now, but what would you say the biggest concern for the Red Sox is after six games?
Well, I mean, the hitting is the obvious choice. And, you know, I did get a bit frustrated these past six games. Even though they went 5-1, I've got a little annoyed with the lineup. And not because I'm overreacting. I mean, everybody likes to overreact the first week of the season, and I don't agree with it. This is just what I sat through for 162 games last year. This team not being able to hit, not being able to hit for power. And it's continuing. J.D. Martinez is off to a slow start. Mookie Betts is starting to get it going a little bit, but he was off to a slow start. Hanley is the same way. Xander Bogaerts has been great, but Rafael Devers hasn't done much. And you know, top to bottom, it's just there's just not much going on. They're not drawing walks. They're, you know, putting these starting pitchers who have been incredible.
I think they have the best starting pitcher ERA in the league right now.
Yeah, and that's with Hector Velasquez and Brian Johnson filling in for Pomeranz and Erod. So I think it's really impressive. I think the hitting will turn around. I know that they played against the Rays and the Marlins, so it's not exactly a glowing endorsement for the lineup. But once they get home, maybe it'll it'll turn things around. And I have to think that J.D. Martinez is going to start cranking homers here. The bullpen's a little frightening. Obviously, it showed its ugly head day one when they had that, you know, awful, awful loss. Honestly, they should be 6-0. That was just an incredible meltdown. But Joe Kelly, I would say I trust Joe Kelly more than most on that staff, which is kind of the concern. That's what I would say is my biggest concern. There's just not many guys I really trust on that staff right now. And it's pretty much limited to Craig Kimbrel and maybe Carson Smith. And, and to bounce back to you, I would say for the Yankees, I wouldn't be too concerned about the bullpen.
No, I'm not. And I think the people that are really, I mean, either they didn't watch the entire year last year, or they just want something to be nervous about. I'm actually really satisfied.
It's a joke. I've seen people tweet like, it's like, oh, the Yankees bullpen is going to be an issue this year. And it's like, dude, like, I mean, first of all, it's like you've given up, the majority of those runs off of, like, you know, the big swings of Justin Smoke. It's not fluky, but, you know, when Justin Smoke hits a home run, it does a lot more damage when there's three men on base, and I know that's partially bullpen inflicted. But
Robertson gave up one big home run, Dellin gave up one big home run, and Canely gave up one big home run, and that's it. I mean, and that can happen at any point, and it just happened to happen 3 days in a row, so everyone, you know, gets all on heightened alert because it's the first 3 days of the year.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that, you know, people have to calm down a little bit. We're not trying to overanalyze right now talking about the beginning of the season, but clearly the Yankees and Red Sox, despite these struggles, which should work themselves out, they're off to a collective 9-3 start, I believe. So,
as you mentioned,
two teams meet each other next week.
Yeah, that's going to be a nice series because, as you mentioned earlier, both teams really have not had the toughest of opponents the first two games of the year here. With the Red Sox playing the Marlins and the Rays, and the Yanks playing the Rays as well, and also playing the Blue Jays. So when the competition heats up, I'm sure these two teams will have some more losses to show for it. But I think these two teams are going to be there the whole year. I don't think there's really anything going to be stopping them, especially in the division, because nothing I've seen from any of these three teams in the AL East has really been anywhere close to impressive. I mean, I guess the Blue Jays have looked the best.
I think the Blue Jays are still going to be solid, like I kind of thought when we talked last week, but I don't know. I mean, you look at first of all, let me just say, the Rays look atrocious. Like, and I know that, you know, the Red Sox didn't exactly blow their doors off, but, you know, when you look at them, like, if the Yankees play the Rays 100 times, do the Rays win 5 times? Like, they just look like they're just not in – they're not in the same league. And, you know, partially that's due to their weak offense. Partially that's due to, you know, their very thin pitching staff at the moment. I mean, the injuries to Eovaldi, and I kind of wanted to talk about this last week. We didn't have the time, but they started to do that bullpen day, and it didn't quite work out against the Red Sox. And, you know, when you really only have, like, 3 healthy starting pitchers in Chris Archer – Blake Snell and Jacob Faria, I don't really know if the bullpen day is gonna really help you out too much. And then once you lose that next guy to injury, if it happens, you're in a lot of trouble. So
yeah, and the Rays,
Archer got beat up too, so twice.
He did, and the Yankees and Red Sox always seem like they hit Archer. I don't really know if I like Archer or not. There's something there
I'm confused as why he's kind of struggled in the past year plus.
Yeah, he's given up a lot more home runs. Probably, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I would guess his fly ball rate has gone up as well, even though he gets a lot of strikeouts. But the thing with the Rays is that what surprised everyone about the Rays last year is that their lineup played really well. They hit really well, but then they go and they dump Corey Dickerson and they dump Logan Morrison. And they dump Evan Longoria, and what do you expect? I mean, this is a team that's batting Carlos Gomez third or fourth on any given night. I mean, it's not going to be a team that hits. And then you got the opposite problem with the Orioles. I mean, Chris Tillman is still in their rotation, a guy that's given up 75 runs in 76 innings. I mean, these two teams are not going to compete.
When you told me that stat, I was like, that's got to be an error. Like, it's just simply not possible.
And he's in a major league rotation still.
Gausman got beat up too. I know they faced the Astros, and they're facing them right now, but you know, this looks like this is probably the year that we've been kind of waiting for, where the Orioles just suck and they play to the level they should be, and you know, it's kind of about time.
Yeah, it is. All right, so let's move over to the NL East. 818-688-6658. If you want to talk Mets or Phillies next, the Mets have gotten off to the much better start of the two. The Phillies have been they've been very underwhelming the first five games of the year. The bullpen's been a major issue. They blew a couple of leads. Connor Egan, who was on last week, not too thrilled with Gabe Kapler and his moves. Yank and Aaron Nola a little early on opening day. The Mets, on the other hand, things have kind of gone the way that people thought they would, as long as these guys remain healthy. Syndergaard and DeGrom have looked good. They've won four of their first six. They're 4-2. So is this what we are to expect?
Four and one.
Yeah. Should we be expecting more of this for the rest of the year for the New York Mets?
I would say, first of all, the offense has kind of done what I thought it would, you know, which is kind of a welcome sight for Mets fans, where, you know, they've had a bit of trouble hitting the ball the past few years. It's been a lot on the back of the pitching staff, and you know, it is interesting too, because last year I remember seeing the Mets and watching games and them actually being able to hit, but they kind of had terrible players. Now they've got, you know, some guys to compliment Cespedes. You know, they brought in Todd Frazier. They brought back Jay Bruce, who, you know, Bruce hasn't really started the year off great. And then Amed Rosario, who's, you know, he came with a big hit today, and he's looked pretty good so far. You know, Frazier and Cespedes both have four RBIs, and they're hitting pretty well. And Joe, Adrian Gonzalez, against all odds, has something left in said tank. So right now the Mets are hitting the ball pretty well. And, you know, maybe they do cool off a bit, but I still think this is probably an above-average offense. And, you know, when you combine that with the way that lineup or that rotation is, with DeGrom, who pitched pretty well, and then I know that Syndergaard has not exactly had the greatest start, but I wouldn't really worry about him. And then combine that with Matt Harvey, who was pretty good the other night. I'm not exactly sure what we'll get from Harvey, especially when you look at Mets' start, and that wasn't very good. The pitching staff is a bit of a mixed bag, but the fact that they're 4-1 right now, hitting the ball well, and they have that pedigree in the rotation, I think that they have what it takes to be pretty damn good right now. And I don't know, maybe they cool off a bit, but I think this is probably more of what you should be expecting of the Mets than what you've seen the past year or two.
Chris, I just witnessed one of the most ridiculous plays I've ever seen in Major League Baseball. I'm watching the Jays Sox game, right? And the White Sox had the bases loaded. Now, mind you, I have the over here. It's 1-1 in the fifth. White Sox had the bases loaded, one out. Moncada hits a deep drive to left field. Granderson's at the wall. He has to leap up on the Toronto wall, right? So, at the very least, if he catches it, they're going to get a run. So he leaps up, the ball goes in his glove, guy starts to tag up, but then the ball falls out of Granderson's glove as he's going to the ground, and then he catches it again, but since he juggled it, the guy from third had to go back, and he couldn't even tag up. So they hit a 400-foot shot that ends up with no runs, with the bases loaded, and now there's two outs. So,
yeah,
good
I guess that's what you come to expect sometimes.
I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to get into betting baseball, and we'll get to that later. But the Phillies have been a different story, like you said. Well, sorry, if you want to finish off the Mets, then we'll hop on the Phillies.
Well, I don't really have much else to add to the Mets. I mean, the good thing for the Mets is they're getting Conforto back, hopefully soon. So. If you're a Mets fan and you think that things are going well so far, I mean, adding Conforto to that lineup is going to be awesome for them. I mean, Conforto, people might forget how well Conforto was hitting before he got hurt. I mean, this guy was a top 10 hitter in baseball. I mean, before he got hurt, he was hitting righties and lefties. So that's going to be a huge addition for this rotation. Like you said, I mean, Harvey is a key. We'll see about Harvey. I mean, you know, you only know what you've seen so far, and what we've seen was one good start. So, you know, you could hold out hope that Harvey's going to hold up this year. You know, we can't guarantee anything here, but he looked all right in this first game. The Phillies, on the other hand, I mean, nothing's really going right for this team. They brought in some offensive weapons, Carlos Santana, Rhys Hoskins came up end of last year. People thought he'd be good this year. They haven't really hit well in the games they have hit well. They haven't pitched well. Nola has not looked as sharp as people thought. I mean, it's just kind of a mess right now for the Phillies.
Yeah, and even though he hasn't been as sharp as people thought, he's still kind of been above and beyond the best pitcher on that staff, which has been, you know, pretty gross. And, you know, Hoskins has been doing his thing, and Scott Kingery's, who came up, has, you know, performed well also. And the other guy who's kind of had a nice start to the year, Cesar Hernandez. But outside of that, it's not too great in Philly land. And I don't want to, you know, once again, we don't want to pronounce anyone dead or you know, freak out too much, but because we're so early in the season. But I guess if you are a Phillies fan and you've seen this team kind of struggle to put together, you know, a bit of a competitive ball club and all these young players not really develop the way you expected, it is a bit concerning when you see a start like this and, you know, you start off against the two division rivals, the Braves and the Mets, two teams who you think you should be at least on the same level as or near, and it hasn't been that way. I mean, Velasquez looks pretty bad too. Carlos Santana hasn't done anything as an addition, or hasn't done much, but, you know, up and down, it's not looking too great early on for the Phillies.
No, and for a team, like you said, that has a losing pedigree, it's definitely more concerning than if this was a team that, you know, was doing well the past few years and just came out a little cold.
Right. And that's,
Chris,
that's
that Granderson
point.
Did not catch the ball. They reviewed it. He didn't catch it, so we got a run here.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they could just give you the run like that. That's pretty incredible.
They ruled it a single, and they just moved all the runners up. And now John Gibbons is mad. This is out of control right now.
Yeah, you might hit that over if this game goes to like 1 a.m. then.
So the Phils, I mean, what I'll say about the Phils is I'm not worried yet because I really do like the lineup. But and sometimes, I mean, throwing Carlos Santana in there, like, guys just have to get used to where they're hitting in the lineup. And is, like you said, they've only played five games.
They're on the road, too.
Yeah, the rotation's not good, and I've never thought it was. But they do get Arrieta in the rotation, I think, tomorrow or maybe the next day after that. But Arrieta's coming, so everyone kind of moves down a peg. I think this team is still probably like between a 75 and 80 win team, which is not great, but it's not terrible. It's not what they've looked like over the first five games. I would not panic if I was a Phillies fan just yet. I think there are brighter. There's a brightness ahead, something brighter than what we've been seeing from the Phillies so far in 2018. Did you have any other comments on them?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up. I think they should be kind of okay.
All right, so let's get to our next segment, which is going to tackle the betting markets a bit. And we're talking teams that have overachieved and underachieved so far this year. We're looking for teams that we could bet on or against for the next week or so before we get back on the air next week. So, Chris, why don't you kick us off? What is one team that you've been watching that is overachieving right now that you think is a prime fade candidate going forward?
Well, I think it's got to be the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, they're the only undefeated team left in baseball, and they, you know, I know that they're facing the Twins.
They might be
right
going
now,
down today.
They might be, but they might also be on their way to a 5-0 start, but, you know, they play the Tigers in the first three games, and that's not a tall task, and they, you know, didn't win any of those games super convincingly by more than three runs. I'm not really sure. You know, they were kind of a team I know that you were a little low on as the season started, and I think that they've got, you know, a handful of teams in their own division that look like they can, you know, handle them pretty well. But I think that, you know, right now, I mean, this team, you've got multiple guys hitting above 350. You know, Adam Frazier, Josh Bell, Gregory Polanco. I'm just not sure if this is going to hold up against teams that aren't the Tigers, and this may be an obvious choice. But there's not a ton coming out of this Pittsburgh lineup that really makes me fear them too much. I know Starling Marte is going to, you know, presumably have a full year, but other than that, you know, it's not really a lineup that inspires too much confidence, even though the fact that they could be 4-1 or 5-0 at this start. And then, you have the rotation here, which, you know, outside of James Italian and I guess Ivan Nova, who I'm not even sure how much I believe in Nova at this point, it doesn't look very good. You know, Italian might be really the only one who's going to have any ability to keep them afloat. So
yeah, the rotation's been the reason that I've been down on them. I bet the team under this year, and they've won their first four games. So now
it's kind of like how you bet the Giants under, and they win their first two games against the Dodgers 1-0, which okay. but the Pirates, I think, seem like a prime regression candidate, and there is a chance. I don't know exactly how much the betting markets will react to this early success, but there is a chance that maybe, you know, I mean, they've got some games up coming up against the Reds and the Cubs, and, you know, I think after they face the Twins, I'm not sure if you want to be trusting the Reds too much, but maybe if the Cubs continue to struggle and the Pirates have a nice series against the Reds, you could be looking at, you know, I'm not expecting a huge correction in the markets, but maybe some games in Wrigley could be on your radar next week early on.
Chris, I'm not as sold on the Cubs as most this year. I think that they might be a little fake. I'm going to be
is going to be? Oh, really? You're going to Chicago. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to the Wednesday night Cubs. I just realized we can't do a Wednesday night brunch next week. Yeah, I'm going to be at the Cubs Pirates game a week from today.
All right. Well, breaking news on the show. We will have to reschedule the brunch next week.
So my team that I'm going against the next week, and it's starting tomorrow, I don't think the Diamondbacks are as good as they've looked. And as opposed to the Pirates, who have had an easy schedule that they've beat up against, the Diamondbacks have actually beat some good teams. They just swept the Dodgers. They beat the Rockies 2 out of 3. So people look at the Diamondbacks and they might say, hey, this might be a team to bet on. But I'm actually not sold on the Diamondbacks. I think they overachieved a little bit last year. Not sold on the lineup. I mean, Goldschmidt's good. Jake Lamb is kind of hit or miss. He's had great halves of years, but never had a good full year. And then, you know, A.J. Pollock, off an injury, could he play a full year? We'll see. He's not bad, but we'll see if he's able to stay on the field. But the rest of this lineup just doesn't wow me. I mean, they played Descalso a lot. They played Jared Dyson, Nick Ahmed, Kettle Marte. Just not guys that hit very well. So I feel like the Diamondbacks might be a little bit overvalued right now. I think they're 5-1. But the rotation's not bad. I actually kind of like the rotation. Corbin looked great today. But if you start seeing the Diamondbacks overvalued, you know, as big favorites, I think that may be a team to look to play against in the next week. Let's go to our undervalued team. Chris, underachieving team through the first week of the year that you're looking to maybe act on in the next week?
I think I'd say the Oakland A's. They were kind of a popular-ish sleeper pick this year, and they started off 2-4. You know, they had to go four games against the Angels, and, you know, that was kind of tough. The Angels look like they should be pretty decent this year. And then they've split two games against the Rangers as well. Two low-scoring games, but I like this team here. And, you know, maybe this Oakland team has not had a ton of success in past years, so maybe there's a chance that people start to sleep on them again a little bit and think, oh, they're still not there. They're still a ways away. But I still like this team. I mean, having Andrew Triggs and Sean Manaea on the top of the rotation, who look pretty decent. Manea's got to stay healthy. But, you know, you combine that with that offense, which I think has a lot of guys who have the potential to hit the ball and hit with some power as well. The corners, Matt Chapman and Matt Olson, who, you know, both quietly had very good years last year with Oakland. I think that there's a good chance that they continue to grow this year and maybe surprise some people who may not have been looking at the A's too much. And then, you know, I mean, you've got a couple other guys. Chris Davis, obviously, still there, still hitting for power. Marcus Simeon's been good so far. And, you know, so is Matt. Well, Matt Joyce hasn't quite got it going just yet. But I think when you've got two young guys like Chapman and Olson who, you know, really look like they are cornerstone building blocks here, and combine it with a couple other guys, I think that there's something here with this Oakland team. And it's not – I don't think that they're quite a playoff team, but they're definitely a team that could surprise some people at certain times. And, you know, maybe the Angels matchup was too tough for them to start off, but I think as the season goes on, and maybe hopefully if you're betting earlier in the season, they will kind of, you know, put things together and put some kind of run forward in terms of maybe giving some value there and betting on them against other teams that, you know, they might be able to beat. I mean, they've got a tough division. We know that. And they're definitely going to get some plenty of games against the Angels, against the Mariners, against the Astros, where they are, plus money. And they may be able to surprise some people. So watch out for the A's in the coming weeks. They have a division-heavy schedule in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad choice. I think the A's are like your prime-time bet 'em as underdogs type team because they can hit.
I don't know what it is, but I feel like Oakland is a weird park to play in. Like, does that make sense? It just seems like there's a bit of like a weird feel to it. You know, I know it's not a traditional ballpark, it's a pitcher's park, but it just seems like a lot of these teams, you know, some, especially ones on the East Coast, they come out there and they just kind of sleepwalk a bit through some of these games.
Yeah, that's not a bad point. And so that's actually a good place to look to play on them too when some of the East Coast teams go out there. But they've been pretty big favorites against Texas this week. But I think going forward, you'll probably get a bunch of games where they're underdogs. Team I'm looking at, 2-3 start. I think they're really good, and I think you should start betting on them as early as tomorrow. Is the St. Louis Cardinals. Their lineup is stacked. And I'm going to actually transition into putting in a brunch bet here. I actually, because my team to fade was the Diamondbacks, and my team to play on is the Cardinals, and they happen to be playing each other tomorrow. So there is my free bet to you for the night.
You got a free bet.
Yeah, I like the St. Louis Cardinals minus 120 tomorrow. I think that's a solid bet. Chris, we have a call, so we'll get to that. You are on with the Sports Brunch. Who do we have joining us right now?
Hi, this is Alexis.
Alexis.
Oh, hi, Alexis. How's it going?
It's going really good. Hey, I caught in late, but I just wanted to say, you know, as a girl, it's really nice to be able to listen to you guys and understand everything and really feel like I just, you know, I have a great podcast to listen to and understand.
This has been something, Alexis. We really appreciate this call. Chris, anything to say to
that? Yeah, this is very nice. No, I mean, it's great. We try to appeal to the female population as well and educate everybody on sports. So we're really happy that, you know, Alexis, you're learning a lot from the brunch. That's what we're here to do. We're here to educate.
Alexis,
Sorry.
Go ahead, Alexis. No, this is your time.
I feel like I've learned a lot in the past couple months from listening to you guys, and I'm amazed at all of the new tricks and trades that I have in my pocket.
Alexis sounds very similar to someone that we had on as a guest in the past on the brunch. Very similar.
Yeah, I wouldn't
very
know
similar
that
qualities.
Is.
No, no. Go back and listen to it though. We ranked the NFL mascots based on who would win in a fight. And Alexis, you sound really similar to the girl that was on that podcast.
Oh, she does. You know, now that you
right?
say that, now I'm putting it. Yeah, now I didn't hear it at first, but now I'm putting it together in my head.
Alexis,
oh, you know,
make sure you go
that,
back
actually.
And listen to that. You did. Okay.
Yeah,
what do you
yeah,
think
yeah.
about that.
You guys keep rocking.
Hey, Alexis.
All right, thanks
maybe,
for the call,
maybe,
Alexis.
I would say you have a voice for podcasting, so maybe pick it up yourself.
Yeah, a buddy of mine tells me that too, so thank you.
We appreciate this Alexis right. call. Wow.
Thanks,
that,
Alexis.
That was something, Chris. I hung up on
yeah,
it. That's
I
it.
Mean,
she's done.
That's okay. I mean, I think she just called in to compliment us, which is pretty great that we could get, you know, our first female caller. So thank you, Alexis. It was very nice, kind words, and we're glad we could, you know, in some way talk sports with you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll take compliments wherever we can get them. I mean, we don't necessarily need callers to call in and talk about things that someone like Keith talked about last week, who I don't know if we revisited what Keith said last week. Were his predictions accurate?
Keith's looking pretty good in terms of his predictions on the Mets. So I gotta say that Keith might know what's up. Hopefully he calls back again soon.
We'll see if Keith could follow up on that solid performance last week. What I was saying before the Alexis call was that I think the Cardinals are a really good bet tomorrow against Robbie Ray, left-handed starter. They have a right-hand heavy lineup. A lot of their righties hit lefties really well. I think good value up to -120 if you are looking for a bet tomorrow. So I like the Cardinals, Chris. That is my first baseball brunch bet. I do have others. Do you want my other ones?
Yeah, give it to the listeners. They deserve it.
Yeah, why not? We're only on live once a week. My other one, I like the Cubs and the Brewers to go over 9. I will give you my quick reasoning. Both starters are lefties, and I think both teams have very good lineups against the lefties, and I do not like John Lester. I'm looking to fade John Lester at any chance I can get. I think he's overvalued in the markets. I think he is experiencing some serious problems with age. His velocity is down. His fly balls are up, which I think his home runs are up as well, which I think comes with age. So I think John Lester is going to in for a rough year, and the markets have not reacted to that yet. So I like the Brewers Cubs to go over the 9-run total in Milwaukee tomorrow. And then I'm mad because I had one for tonight that starts in an hour, but it moved pretty significantly right before we came on the air. I'll give it out anyway. I don't like it nearly as much now as I did before the show, but I like the Texas Rangers to fade your Oakland one more time. I like Texas plus 155. It is now down to 140. Yeah, I mean, you know, Doug Fister, he's a decent dog. He sometimes, I mean, he's able to usually hold teams to about 3 or 4 runs. I think the Rangers are going to score some runs tonight. I like the lineup that they have out there. They took Odor out against the lefty finally. So I like the Rangers at 155. It's down to 140. Obviously don't like it as much there. But if you want to throw a little bit of money on an overnight West Coast dog, take the Rangers tonight plus 140, 145 around
there. All right, well, That's good stuff, Joe. We appreciate it. We'll definitely have some more bets coming forward. As I said, I have not broken into the baseball betting quite yet, but I know you have been, and you told me that, you know, you're up a little bit. So the model's looking good so far. I know that it went 1-2, I believe, on the day that we had it open. But if you listen in each week, we should have some baseball bets for you.
Yes, we will. So let's get to our final segment here again, 818-688-6658 if you want to call in. Let's do some in or out.
Everybody in?
Clear out your seats.
In.
Fuck yes, I'm in.
It's time to play.
Hey, you can't spell involved without an in.
In or out.
All right, Chris, what do you got for us?
All right, Joe, so very special this week, the return of In or Out, brought to you as always by the In or Out Burgers. Rest in peace. And we have pudding or put out.
Wow. Okay.
You know, this was a tough one, Joe. I will say this is a very tough one, but this is for baked goods. And I know you might not really associate pudding with, but let's say bread pudding, and we're grasping at straws this one. So. why don't we start off there? Joe, are you put in or put out on bread pudding?
Nah, put out. Bread pudding is like the thing that, it's like moist, right? It's like damp. soggy.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like soggy bread. It's almost as if like you had like a mushed up bowl of like before it was cooked French toast, you know?
Yeah, I'm so put out on that. I'm out on tiramisu for the same reason. I don't like any of that damp bread type thing. I'm very put out.
Wow. Well, I would say I'm put out on tiramisu as well if we're going to go there. But I'm put in on bread pudding. I've had it a few times before. It's pretty good, and I think you can make it a couple of different ways. Maybe put some syrup on it too. It's not bad, Joe.
All right.
So next,
hopefully you have
next
something
up,
better
we have,
here.
Next up, we've got the brownie. Are you put in or put out on brownies?
Well, I mean, Chris, the brownie? Are you kidding me? Put in, and we have a caller. So who's on the phone? You're on with the brunch.
Hey, guys. It's Nicole.
Hey, Nicole.
Oh, hey, Nicole. Wow, we have female heavy callers.
I wanted to say, so the caller from last week, that was me. And I wanted to do an in or out with you guys because I've missed it. Since
oh,
we haven't seen
you. Okay.
Chris,
so
why don't you serve her up an in or out?
All right. So then while we're at it, I'll give you what I just gave Joe, and maybe I'll give you another one. Nicole, are you put in or put out on brownies?
Oh, I am very put in on brownies. That is one of my go-to. Excuse me. Sorry, that's one of my go-to desserts.
Chris, you gave her a layup there. You got to give her something tougher.
I know. Don't choke, Nicole. You got this.
I'm sorry. No, but for real, that is my go-to dessert to bake. You guys know I'm always baking, and brownies are my go-to. So very pudding on brownies.
Okay, and I'll
Chris,
give you
can
one
you give
more,
her one more tougher one?
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah. I'll give you
please,
a tougher one. Give
please,
me.
Chris.
What about strawberry shortcake? Are you put in or put out?
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
you
like
know what?
One.
I'm a big dessert person, but I think I'm going to have to go put out. Just because I like so many desserts, and I think I'm pretty much putting on mostly everything, but it's just not one of my favorites.
Yeah, I respect that. That's kind of how I feel with a lot of these food segments that we do, where I kind of have to draw the line because
yeah,
kind of like everything.
I'm put in on Nicole's response to that because I'm put out on strawberry shortcake.
Yeah, I am too. It's just there's nothing too special about it, you know?
Nicole, anything else you want to add here?
Not much. I'm really a big fan of this whole call-in thing. So keep doing it, guys.
All right, we're a big fan of you, Nicole. We appreciate the call.
Thank you. See you guys later.
Yeah, be careful with that,
Chris,
Joe. We don't want to compliment the listeners too much.
I mean, we've had some good listeners, Chris. I mean, if they're good, you compliment them. If not,
of course,
you hang up on them. I learned that from Mike Francesa. Not
that's
the compliment part.
All right, so moving on, put in, put out. Joe, cheesecake, are you put in or put out?
I mean, that is something that I am very put in on. However, I have a caveat there because although I am an Italian male that has grown up in a predominantly Italian culture, I do not like Italian cheesecake. I am a huge fan of the New York-style cheesecake. So put in on New York-style, put out on Italian-style.
Yeah, I'm going to say I'm very put in on cheesecake. I mean, there's really not much more. It might be my favorite dessert. There's not much more that I like than a good cheesecake. And I'd have to say, you know, whenever the opportunity presents itself, I am all for having a slice. So very put in on cheesecake. We've got a few more minutes here, so we might as well finish it out. I mean, there are an endless number of baked goods here. So next up, why don't we do a special one? And this is going to be a different twist on the in or out. I'm going to give you two, Joe. You have to be put in on one and put out on the other. So, you know, you
well,
tell
you're
me.
Really restricting the in or out now, huh?
Well, hey, you know what? When I'm giving you some of these delicious desserts, it's gonna have to get tough here, you know. It's not
we can't
give it too many layups. So we got cake, normal cake, no ice cream, no cheesecake, just normal cake, and cupcakes. Are you put in or put out in the war, cupcakes versus cakes?
I'm going to have to lean towards cupcakes here. So I'll be put in on cupcakes and put out on cake. I feel like cake sometimes, there's so much going on in a cake that there's always usually one part of the cake that ruins the entire cake. Whereas a cupcake, there's only really two things going on. There's the cake part and the icing part. And I feel like the icing used to ice the cupcakes is usually better than icing on cake. So I'm going to have to choose the cupcake over the cake.
Yeah, I would say I'm put in on the cupcake as well. I'm not a huge cake guy, despite my cheesecake remarks. I kind of agree with that sentiment that the icing is probably better on the cupcake. And I think, you know, you get the inside of the cake. I don't really like it as much as the compact, smaller version of it in the cupcake. So I would have to be put in on the cupcake and put out on the cake. Usually when we have a birthday party, not always going to jump on the cake bandwagon.
Yeah. You know, Chris, I mean, I go to a lot of weddings as a wedding DJ. People moving towards the cupcake even for wedding desserts now. I've seen cupcakes. I've seen, Chris, duck donuts. To give a shout-out to our boy Matt Erickson.
Another great one, duck donuts, you know, I would say could not be more put in than on duck donuts, the best donuts out there. So, you know, that's another great one.
We should have reached out to duck donuts to maybe sponsor this segment today.
That's true.
The cracks.
I'm sure we could probably put together some sponsorship deals with duck donuts in the future.
All right, that's fair.
Do
you have anything else here?
Yeah, one more and then a lightning round, excuse me. Danishes, Joe, are you put in or put out?
I'm going to be put out. I mean, you know, it's a different kind of baked good because you're eating it as like a breakfast more so than a dessert. But there's not too many Danishes that I really, you know, I don't jump through any hoops to go get a Danish. So I'm out. I'm put out.
I'm actually pretty put in on Danishes. You know, I think they're a great pastry, and I'm a very big fan, especially of the cheese Danishes. So that's my go-to if I'm going for a Danish, and the cheese filling is just right. You usually don't get that kind of mixture of a cheesy taste with the sweet pastry to kind of combine well, but it works for the cheese Danish, in my opinion.
He likes
right,
the cheese Danish.
Time.
All right.
Lightning round time. Let's do pies, Joe. And we're going to have to be quick, and you can cut me off whenever we run out of time here. So put in, put out, apple pie.
Put in.
I am as well. Banana cream pie.
Put in.
I am. That's my favorite pie. Blueberry pie.
Yeah, well, you're a big banana guy, so that doesn't surprise
me.
Put out on blueberry pie.
Sounded very judgmental there. I'm put in on blueberry, though. I'm a big fan of the blueberry pie. How about pumpkin pie?
Put in, but it has to be there's some pumpkin pies I've had that are not very good.
I agree.
I'm put in.
I'm a little iffy on the pumpkin pie. I agree. It kind of has to be made well, and you probably have to enjoy it a certain time of year. Joe, what about the pecan pie? Do you say pecan or pecan? I don't know.
I usually say pecan. I think pecan is a little bit more bougie, but I'm put out. I don't prefer the pecan pie.
Okay, yeah, I'm pretty put out too.
Chris,
I'm not
one more
really
here.
A huge fan of the pecan pie. That was actually my last one. So what? I was going to give you the coffee cake, Joe. Are you put in or put out?
The Drake's coffee cake. I'm put in, Chris. I talked to someone earlier.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine was put out. I'm put in.
Yeah, I think it was Keith. I think he said that. I'm very put in. I agree with him.
All right, so that'll do it here for the Sports Brunch. Thanks so much for listening, ladies and gents. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at The Brunch Pod. Like us on Facebook at The Brunch Network. And subscribe to our channel on iTunes. Chris, I forgot we did not announce our T-shirt winners. So real quick. Our one T-shirt winner was Mark Campanelli, and we will have to wait until next week. Next week, we'll announce the review T-shirt winner. See everyone next week. Thanks for listening to the Sports Brunch.